listening to Building Bridges with Ken Nash and myself, Mimi Rosenberg.
We have Sarah Nelson with us, and she's the head of a flight attendants union, and denounced Trump's government shutdown for endangering airline security and forcing workers to labor without pay. She actually had the audacity to tell her fellow labor leaders to end the shutdown of the government by the Trump administration with a general strike. By doing so, she became America's most popular flight attendant and a rising star in the labor movement. And we have Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, a working registered nurse, the president of the 42,000-member New York State Nurses Association, New York's largest nurses group, which has become known for their support of Medicare for All. They've taken service-oriented work and further extended it into the needs of community. And also with us is Bianca Cunningham, who's a staff writer and organizer at Labor Notes. And Bianca got her start in the labor movement as a Verizon retail worker, and she was a leader in the 2014 drive that won a union at 7 stores, breaking into wireless retail for the first time in company history. And those workers went on to win their first union contract when they joined landline workers in the 2016 Verizon strike. Where we're going is to try to look at thinking outside of the box. What are the issues and mechanisms that are really going to put the movement back in the labor movement? Spark and rejuvenate the energy and life of the working class in an organized form. Judy, why don't you begin us on that discussion?
The first thing is for workers to understand that they own their union, that they're engaged in their union, that they don't see the union as a provider of services for which they pay a fee, but as their own instrument of struggle to deal with the conditions under which they work. For those of us who provide a service to our community, it's much easier for people to see how linked their own struggles are to our patients. That's why we got very involved with Medicare for All, because we'd see incredible weaknesses and dysfunction of the healthcare system. The first step to build a labor movement for people who are already organized is for the workers to feel that somebody has their back, that they have the skills, that they have the training to directly confront the conditions on what, you know, I guess is commonly known as the shop floor. Then to see these broader issues, develop solidarity from unit to unit, from hospital to hospital in our case, and beyond to our broader community, our patients who are marginalized because of income, because of environmental racism, because of all the different conditions, social determinants of health, which include housing, poverty, nutrition, and all these other things. So for us, it's not that big a stretch to broaden the concept of what a workers' movement could look like.
Bianca, you've been traversing the country and have the vigor and energy of youth and come from the rank and file, nurtured in struggle. What do you see at a time when the private sector unions membership is at an all-time low? We've got the right to work states. We are going through a period with the Trump administration that is daily turning back rules and regulations, and labor laws are totally at odds with the working class. What has been your experience, and what stimulates and excites you that we can grab onto?
I think a lot of what Judy said, traveling around the country, talking to workers, particularly young workers like myself, I think that young workers just don't see their unions as a vehicle to solve the problems that they are experiencing in their workplaces. What's been important for us to do is to make those connections, to say, what is it that you actually care about, and to show that, like Judy, point, this is not like a service model unionism, that the rank and file actually own their own union and feel prepared with skills and experience to go out and take on the fights and take on the boss in a really empowered way that will yield results. When we organized in 2014, I got fired for that organizing. It's been the long game with Verizon Wireless. They didn't just roll over and lose. I mean, you know, they continued to fight, and you could see them aggressively up to now retaliating 5 years later for that union vote. And so I think that just adequately preparing young workers and demonstrating through other means that we actually have the capacity to win.
We do now also have Sarah Nelson with us, and she's the head of the flight attendants union.
Sarah, welcome. Thank you very much.
Basically, you were taking a blast from the past talking about a general strike, and I'm not necessarily saying that's the only blast from the past we should be thinking of. So tell us what you think the labor movement, the situation is right now, and whether we can draw some inspiration from the past and maybe think of some new ways to put some more life into this labor movement.
Here's the deal. We've got increasing income inequality. People are experiencing the very same conditions in their jobs, no matter what industry that is. They can't get by. They have family members who are dying because they can't get the health care that they need. They have to work 2 and 3 jobs to get by. Across the board, different industries are understaffing at work, putting more on each individual worker to do more while they're at work for less pay. They're seeing executives run away with incredible bonuses. Income that flows back to them from the stock buybacks, $3.8 trillion since 2009 in the Great Recession, have gone from American businesses just into stock buybacks. That is really only going to enriching the 1%. And these conditions are unsustainable. People are hitting a place where they're not willing to put up with it anymore. They're finding common ground with their friends and neighbors, experiencing the same kinds of issues. The government shutdown was all of this on steroids. 2 million people suddenly out of work, when in any private business, you would have at least 60 days notice for that. You would have the ability to say, I'm not going to come to work if I'm not going to get paid. These people had to come to work under threat of federal indictment if they didn't. These conditions are just completely anathema to what America is supposed to be. As these federal workers were not able to do their job, these are people who have been vilified for decades by the GOP and by others who want to have all the money and all the control, privatize all functions of government. These federal workers who do this work and couldn't do this work were actually not making it possible for the rest of us to do our job. So as flight attendants, we could see very clearly that there were gaps and holes that were growing in our safety systems. As 40% of DHS's cybersecurity unit was furloughed during this time, not doing the backup work to give our security people on the front lines the information that they need to be able to do their jobs each day. Our safety and security was at stake, and as flight attendants, we've experienced horrific accidents. We've experienced the worst terror attack on U.S. soil. I lost my good friends. That was in my workspace. So we know very well when there's gaps in safety and security, and we know that not only are we there to save lives, and that this was a situation where lives were being threatened because of the actions of our government, we also, when safety and security fails, there is a massive economic effect as well. There was a lot at stake. It was really the time to call attention to how miserably this government had failed us, this administration, and call people together to say that if federal workers can't do their jobs, we can't do ours. There's enough at stake here. What are you willing to do to end it? Many, many people were saying if the federal workers just walk off the job, if the air traffic controllers don't come to work, if the TSA officers don't come to work, this will be over. Well, that is not the way the labor movement works. And so what we had to talk about was when people are on strike, when people are locked out, other unions come to their side. We contribute to strike funds. We get on their picket lines. We help them out because we know that if their strike fails, if their pushback against the boss fails, the rest of us are at risk the next time. That was true in this instance, and it's a metaphor for what's really going on across the country right now. People are getting out of their cubicles. They're getting out of their work sites and seeing that their experience is very much connected to the people who are their friends and neighbors. This is really a time where interest in unions are growing because people have been stretched so far, and they've also been told that we can't get along. And that is just completely opposite to the view of Americans and how we want to live our lives. We really love solidarity, and we see that when times get really bad. But we want to see that in our regular daily lives. So interest in unions is growing. This is the time for us to organize. There are plenty of issues to fight back on. We need to have a lot of strikes. We need to get a lot of people out there saying what they're willing to do to fight back and fight for their families and help people feel the power that they can have in their own lives by joining together in the labor movement to take their power back and stop that inequality and get not only bread, but roses too.
Well, Sarah, I certainly couldn't agree with you more on this analysis of the situation. But I'm thinking that still what we have is a lot of isolated fights separate from each other. Now, I know you've got a fight with the regional airline carriers, and you've supported some of the Unite Here workers who in the airports who are doing the catering. But is there a way to connect these fights together in some kind of way, because they don't get the attention that they deserve and need?
Look at what California is doing with this effort to beat back the misclassification of gig workers. In the past, labor unions and the taxi drivers might have called gig workers scabs, but they're recognizing that they're sleeping there in their cars and the cab drivers can't make ends meet anymore, and they're joining forces because they understand they're not at odds with each other, but they've got industry that's trying to push them lower and lower and put this all on their backs. They've joined together to really use the power of the entire labor movement in California to push through Assembly Bill 5, which will fix this misclassification of workers, put some responsibility on the employers who are employing contract workers, who set the wages and conditions and job security for those workers, and make them have to answer to those workers, give those workers the right to join a union, fight back, and bargain. That's what we can do. Join together and we can say, if these workers can be misclassified, we're the next ones on the line. We've seen that as flight attendants. We see that it's not just in this country, that workers have no borders. When we have recently, flight attendants and pilots have been put up with the challenge of open skies agreements, we have been challenged that airlines could just flag their airline in a separate country and use the labor rights of that country to undermine our jobs here. Replace us with workers from the other side of the world who may be making, a dollar an hour. All the airlines will outsource all of our work, and not a single pilot or flight attendant needs to actually live in the United States. We see that very clearly, and we see that when one worker can be undermined, the rest of us are in jeopardy. We have to hold up these fights that bring us all together and help to define that, just like the California labor movement is doing.
Judy Sheridan Gonzalez and Bianca Cunningham, Dave laborers, laundry workers, dishwashers, and various other really low-wage jobs and very often jobs done by immigrants. You think about how we do create that broader solidarity amongst the working class and the different working in venues.
This is Judy. What we have to recognize is that our enemies are united, whether it's the labor board or the Supreme Court or the Congress or the federal government, with these awful anti-union laws, anti-labor laws. They're united. We have to also be united, regardless of what our skill level is. If you're a precarious worker, low-wage worker, if you're a service worker, professional worker, blue-collar, white-collar, which are old terms now, we can't win as a labor movement if we're not all in this together. Deregulation, this factory speed up, understaffing, it affects all of us. Automation, technology is not being used to enhance what we do, it's being used to replace us or to denigrate us or to deprofessionalize us or to make us kind of automatons or robots or cogs in this dysfunctional machine that we're all working in. A laxity in enforcement of safety regulations. These are things that affect all of us. Violence in the workplace, violence in our society. Everything's totally connected and international at this point. One of the things we can do in our own unions is help people understand that today it's him, tomorrow it's her, and the next day it's you. Whatever happens to anyone can happen to you. The reaction in the building, the fight back can also happen. I mean, I think we can look at Puerto Rico and what happened there in terms of a massive general strike that took down the government. People can unite when they're fired up enough and definitely have an impact. I think Sarah proved that. The government shutdown. People who weren't involved, like I have family members who are TSA workers who were forced to go to work without pay, and they couldn't even, we had to lend money for people to pay for gas to go to work. What kind of a situation is that? Everyone has a family member or a relative or a neighbor who's impacted. As a community, we need to all try to come together, talk to one another, and understand and respect the work that we all do, and that nothing happens if we don't work. The wheels don't turn.
Bianca Cunningham, you're doing a lot of traveling around the country. What is it that you see on the minds of young rank-and-file workers? Are they interested in collective organizing? Do they understand the imperative of unions, or unions themselves reaching out to youth, to women, to immigrants, to people of color on the issues that are also of critical importance in their lives?
People are really hungry for resources and for information about how to take collective action and how to work alongside with their coworkers to improve working conditions. What people are frustrated with is the process of being a woman or being a person of color, a black worker, is the tokenization that comes along with it. So I think that if we're going to meaningfully involve people and really show them and let them feel the powers in their own hands and that they really do have chance to win, people are really eager for that type of direction. Speaks to my own experience in the Verizon strike. We were young workers in retail, very small. There were 7 stores, but it only covered around 65 to 70 people. We were small, and what we realized in bargaining is, how are we ever going to bargain anything meaningful when we don't have the leverage that we need, which led us to the 49-day strike with our landline brothers and sisters? But I say that to say is that it was strategic, right? It wasn't just that 70 workers were going to try to fight. They were going to fight alongside other folks who had even more leverage with the phone company. Also, during that campaign, they sent workers over to the Philippines to talk to from the call centers who had been outsourced from the United States to the Philippines, to talk to them about the promises that Verizon had broken to them. And so there was a global component as well. And I think that as we're building these campaigns and taking on the boss, start thinking about creative ways to connect all of our struggles, the struggles of a call center worker in the Philippines, the struggle of a retail worker in Brooklyn, the struggles of folks that climb up and down the poles and service the lines every day. So bringing those fights together is really going to be the key.
Sarah, I think that's going to be the key also, bringing the fights together. Do you have any ideas along those lines of bringing the different fights together so we're not all fighting a separate battle?
First of all, we can't ignore the fact that you've got to meet people where they are. We have 13 million people who are actually in unions today. We can engage those people today. Imagine if you had 13 million people in this country who loved their union and understood the importance of inviting 5 other people to join the labor movement. Imagine how powerful that could be. We've really got to use the structures that we have today to connect fights with each other. What's really important is, from a national level, that we are leading discussions around issues that are commonplace. What we have done, for example, with Unite Here in getting ready for the catering workers' fight, is we've brought flight attendants and caterers together to a table together to talk about the common safety and health issues that we have with much of the equipment that goes on our planes and through their kitchens. We've connected our fights in that way. By connecting those fights, you get people together in a room. They see each other face-to-face. They look in each other's eyes. They hear each other's personal stories. And that builds a connection with people. That human connection is more powerful than anything you can imagine. Bianca was just talking about the Verizon strike. You know, when people get out on the picket line and talk with each other, they may be in different stores across the city, but now all of a sudden they're in a common fight and they understand each other's struggle. Once you stand up for somebody else and you're there for them in that fight, you make it more your own. You make their stories your own. You build power that way. I think about where we are in healthcare. There are many people in the political system who do not understand where this country is actually on healthcare right now. We are not talking about the issue of healthcare from 20, 30 years ago. The talking points of, you know, I don't want to lose my great healthcare plan or my access to my doctor are gone, because not only have union healthcare plans been diminished, but the for-profit healthcare system has degraded healthcare for everyone in this country so badly that everybody has a story. People are not necessarily talking about it openly, because who wants to talk about their healthcare issues? Who wants to actually form a GoFundMe account and have everybody know everything about their medical condition while they're going through it, just so that they can pay for it? These are common stories, and even if you have the best plan in the world and you're trying to access healthcare in a system where people are being laid off, there's fewer nurses, there's fewer doctors, there's people spending more time doing administrative work rather than getting right to treating the patients. They're trying to get prescription drugs. I have a family member who can live for decades on a drug that is $15,000 a month and can live just fine taking this drug. Without taking the drug, it's almost sure that within 6 months he'll be dead. Luckily, there's a plan where he can get it for cheaper, but what happens to the person who doesn't have health care or doesn't have the plan that covers that drug? What kind of a system are we living in? these are the issues that people are experiencing, and if you're not experiencing it directly in your family, you're experiencing it with a friend or neighbor or someone in your church or someone in your workplace. And these human connections are really what matter the most to us. So people are ready to have a conversation about why we need to address healthcare in this country in a way that we have not seen in past decades, because it has risen to a point where you can't find someone who hasn't had someone affected by this for-profit healthcare system in an incredibly negative way, and maybe even in a way where someone has died because of it. So we can bring people together and talk about these national issues, but we have to start with where they are in the workplace, start the conversations in the workplace, and understand that we have to build the power of our unions in the workplace so that people understand that solidarity, can feel it, can feel the power that they have to change their own lives, but then bring them together very strategically with other workers, bring them out on other picket lines, bring them together for their fights, bring them together around common issues in the community or national issues to have those discussions so we can share with each other, look each other in the eye, understand that we actually have a common fight, and that we have to stand up for each other.
Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, it seems to me that Sarah just reached out her hand to you, because certainly the New York State Nurses Association is really been one of the most foremost labor organizations, or any organization that has immersed itself in the call for Medicare for All, Singapore health system. I've long thought that treating people more holistically, understanding the issues that inure to their lives every day and taking a stance on that, from housing issues, for healthcare rights, for human rights. Indeed, some of the greatest activity where people of color, women, etc., came into the labor movement, they came into the public sector workforce, and a lot of that had to do with unions taking up those issues of civil rights, of human rights. So I wonder if that has to be more of the issues too, that the bread and butter issues of strategic importance, no doubt, but that there has to be a more holistic treatment and response of organized labor to the needs of people. What do you think?
Nurses have direct communication with the savage inequities of the healthcare system. We all get calls from neighbors and relatives with pictures of their rashes. What should they do? They don't want to have to pay their copay, or should they go to the ER for this or that because it costs $300 to go? And I think what Sarah says is true. People say they have this great health insurance. People don't have great health insurance and don't have great choices and have long waits and have all the things that have been used to denigrate single payer or Medicare for All system. People are not getting the care that they need unless they're incredibly well connected and wealthy, or if they happen to have a really good plan and have had really good luck with being able to keep the same provider. So we see that. The broader issue, the biggest challenge that we have, people don't know labor history at all. We've got to educate people about what created the conditions that they currently have that are at all acceptable. And the other thing is to change the narrative. There's a lot of hopelessness where people just feel defeated and they accept current paradigm that, you know, they're just stuck in this world where they're powerless. When we negotiate contracts or when we fight for something, as a healthcare worker with a healthcare union, I don't want to fight over crumbs with people who are fighting for funding, especially in the public sector, for education or for housing, for social welfare issues. We shouldn't be fighting over crumbs. We should be demanding that the tax system change so that wealthy actually pay their share of taxes.
Bianca Cunningham, has the working class changed? Are there ways of weeding through the xenophobia, weeding through the homophobia, weeding through the racism, to really draw people into a progressive understanding that, as we would say, workers of the world, unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains and a world to win?
Sure. The AFL-CIO wants the message out to represent everyone equally. When I joined the labor movement, I decided to organize my workplace because I wanted to confront my boss, because I wanted to be able to have a position to bargain for the conditions to which I worked. But I stayed in the labor movement because I realized that it was a place that I could say Black Lives Matter and stand up against brutality. It was a place that I could say it matters that everybody has adequate health care and that we should be fighting for Medicare for All. It's a place that I could take on broader social justice fights that I always interconnect the young Black women and the labor movement. So more and more, then I think that labor needs to be out in the front around these fights, not trailing in the back, They need to be the vehicle to where people stream. So I think that as long as we're continuing bargaining over common good demands, like what we saw with the UCLA strike, it was really transformational to see 80% of the city of LA standing with the teachers. Why? Because it wasn't about very specific issues that only pertain to the teachers, but it was about having services in schools, about having nurses in every school and psychologists in schools and librarians, and about not having random searches on black and brown kids in classrooms, and taking on broader issues that the community can get behind, I think is really the key to labor leading the way on these fights in the future.
The United Mine Workers of America was one of the first unions to make sure that we were fighting for equality for all. They wrote into their constitution before 1900 that African Americans were absolutely afforded the same rights as whites. They built their union with immigrants who were pushed into conditions that were unsustainable. And if they stepped out of line of that, they would lose their job, lose their housing. If they tried to form the union, they may even be threatened with being killed. Or immigrants came together who spoke many different languages, came together to build a job that we think of as today, one of the old line unions. This came out of the same kinds of conditions that we're fighting for today, fighting for workers in low-wage conditions, often immigrants who are being taken advantage of. The labor movement reliving its history with the new equality. The worker today is not just the man, it is the woman too. Women are rising up and women are leading the labor movement, setting a new marker for equality for all in the workplace, and lift that up and understand that we have to understand our history, the way that people paved the road for us to stand on their shoulders today. But then understand that we can do it again. We can rebuild this labor movement, and it can be much better than it ever has been before.
Judy Sheridan Gonzalez.
There aren't two worlds. There isn't community and labor. Labor is community, and community is labor. Whether you have a job or whether you don't have a job, whether you're unionized or you're not unionized, we're really all in this together. Developing that solidarity, because you really feel it in your heart and in your soul. And every time there's a struggle, every time there's an action, that's what pulls people together. And when you are in a strike or you're in any kind of struggle, when other workers and community members come to you and support you, it raises your consciousness. It's just so powerful to get that kind of support. People really need to understand their future lies in the success of others as well.
Yeah, I want to say that I think that if we can challenge people to redefine what they imagine when we say working class, when we can challenge ourselves to more inclusive and to redefine what the working class means to people in this country. I want to say that there's dignity in all labor. Sex work is work, and so that we just need to find ways to continue to support one another, to push out of our comfort zones, and continue to grow together and strengthen solidarity.
It's the most wonderful message I've heard, and I knew it would come from my sisters. We have been speaking with Sarah Nelson, head of the Flight Attendants Union, and Judy Sheridan Gonzalez, president of the 42,000 strong New York State Nurses Association, and Bianca Cunningham, clearly a fierce organizer and a wonderful staff writer and organizer at Labor Notes, and you really should read that publication. You've really picked up my spirit. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.